Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. This is episode 198. I'm your host, Eric Anthony, and joining me today is often, I would just say co-host of the Cave of Solitude, frequent guest, the one and only Shane the Sheriff Heron. Shane, welcome back, buddy. How's it going?
Hi.
You just do that on purpose. You're a pain in the ass. Yeah. Hi.
Why have I been, like, downgraded to not a co-host? I thought it was agreed I'm a co-host.
Yeah, you are. Like, you know what?
We're not sure?
No, you know why? Because sometimes I actually have you on as a guest who I interview for what it is that you're working on, right? And then there's times you're on the show just for fun. So
no, it's always a co-host.
You're always a co-host. Even when we're talking about something you're working on and you're, like, being interviewed, you're still a co-host. Fair enough.
Yeah. I'm just a selfish co-host in those positions.
Got it. Plugging your own stuff. Perfect. That makes sense. We could work with that.
I don't know.
So, how's everything going? How's your long weekend been so far? Have you enjoying the nice weather at the very least?
No. yesterday I was working while everyone was nice and sunny and everyone was out, and I missed most of the good fun stuff. Today we went down to the brickworks, but it wasn't like sunny, but it was nice still. It was pretty good. We saw so many turtles.
Really?
I was very pleased with that. Yeah.
But were there a lot of people out there today? Are people getting kind of excited with, you know, the phase one of things slowly opening up again? What was the gauge that you're able to?
I think it was just based on weather. It looked like it was going to rain, so not as many people were out, but there was still a good amount. But from what I saw yesterday and what I heard, like, I talked to a guy who, he rode his bike from Trinity Bellwoods all the way to the brickworks, and he was like, there was people everywhere yesterday. And I saw videos of, like, Bellwoods and High Park, and, like, there's just so many people there. And I'm like, I get it. People are cooped up for a couple months, and, like, you know, they want to go out and do stuff. But I'm still a bit worried that, like, you're seeing literally, like, Germany, Singapore, South Korea were on top of this right away, and they did really covered it really good. And then they loosened restrictions too quickly and too, I guess, carelessly, and they got a big second spike of it. And I'm like, I don't want that to happen here, because then, like, I just want this to be, like, one shot, one kill, let's get it over with. So if we just do this a little bit longer properly, then, like, I think we can be all right in Ontario. But I don't know, man. I have a feeling we're going to get another second spike, like, when the numbers start going up again, because people are out in full force. And it's found to be that people aren't going to be social distancing the way they were before.
No, I think I haven't gone crazy. I went and visited my mother yesterday for the first time since February. And we went for a walk in the park, and they have a patio in their condo in their backyard where we were able to kind of sit apart from each other and just be outside all day, which was nice.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
I think, like, my problem is, like, when I see, like, friends who I haven't seen in a long time, like, I don't want to sit 6 feet apart, you know, like, I want to, like, hug them and, like, you know, have some beers and get close and, like, talk and do all your thing. So it's just, like, I'd rather not even do it if we have to be sort of apart right now. I'd rather just wait until, like, you know, you can kind of go back to normal a little bit more, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. I fear we're going to get another spike of it where it starts going up again.
I think so. I think that's inevitable for most places. I mean, I don't know the science or the economics behind it either, but they do say, like, you know, things can't be closed down the way they are for too much longer, because we got to go back to making things and people working so that they can buy things, because this is going to happen again, and we got to have supplies. So it's like this revolution of, like, oh, okay, so it's inevitable, but this other stuff is, we can't just expect that it's always going to be there either. Like, it's this weird, I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at what's going on in the States, and the States is crazy. Like, the numbers are insane, and they're, like, they're not even, like, so many states are not doing any social distancing, or they're just going back to normal. So I think, like, I'm really lucky that we live in Canada and Ontario, and we have, you know, government officials who are kind of sane and doing the right thing, I think. So I'm very, very pleased that I live in a country like Canada right now, seeing all this go down.
Yeah, and I think there's certain things I've never really thought about until I did get a little bit older and kind of understand how governance works. And the States is, like, okay, it's a country, but there's so many different states that operate somewhat independently, it feels like, in Canada. I mean, it's a larger country, but it also feels smaller, not just as far as the population is concerned, but also in things that are being put in legislation. Like, it just seems easier to manage because it's 10 provinces and 3 territories or whatever it is, right? Whereas in the States, it's like 50 different countries in one country.
Well, and it's also, it's like, there's no leadership there. Like, Trump is a disaster. So many of the governors have differing opinions. Like, it's literally, like, nobody knows really what the right thing is to do is right now. Or, like, in Canada, like, you know, like Doug Ford or Trudeau or not, like, they're leading and they're on the same page, you know, telling people what to do. And we have some, at times like this, people need leadership. They need someone to tell them, this is what's happening and this is what we're going to do about it. And I think they're both, whether you like them or not, I think they're both doing a decent job during this and leading people and showing them, you know, listen to the doctors, listen to the scientists, and we can get through this.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to when this does settle down. I can handle the quiet time and things not being so busy, but there are moments, especially when the weather's getting nice, where you're like, oh man, like nothing is happening this summer. Everything's been canceled. I don't ever go to the CNE, but you think of other things that you sometimes don't even register, you know, as far as having to be canceled. And now, like, the Taste of Danforth is canceled and Caravana.
Yeah, I don't even like Taste of Danforth, and every time I'm there, I hate it because it's so many people.
Right.
But I was, like, kind of sad where I read it. I was like, oh, that's not happening.
Yeah, no jazz festival. Like, all these things that kind of mark the calendar as what's happening this weekend in the city. Yeah. Like,
especially
nothing.
Especially for us nerds, too, right? It's all about Comic-Cons, and we're missing the three biggest Comic-Cons we do, which is like the Toronto March show and then the TCAF and then Fan Expo. Because I don't think it's official, but it seems like Fan Expo is not happening, right?
Yeah, because they said something about how up until August 30th, there won't be any large gatherings of I don't know how many people. And it's like, well, okay, that leaves,
you know, Fan Expo was supposed to be the 26th to the 31st or something like that.
Something like that, right? So that's off the
list. That's out.
Yeah. So, and you know, There's something to be said. Like, I'm not a person who has to be around everybody all the time. Like, I can function just fine in small groups. I prefer it. But there is something to be said about, you know, all of us experiencing something together, moments in life. Like, whether it's a concert, whether it's some sort of event where we were all there and we all kind of experienced it. There's something special about that part of being human, that when it's not happening at all, it's like, man, this is different.
It's so weird because there's been rumors, you know, and even like 2015, Bill Gates, you know, kind of like said something that kind of predicted a pandemic like this happening. But you always just think it's going to be in like, you know, science fiction novel. You don't ever expect it to actually happen to us. And now we're like living through this crazy thing that's never happened in anyone's lifetime, I guess, since like the Spanish flu or whatever back in 1918 or whatever it was.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it makes
you. What can you do?
No, not much. But how? What have you been doing to cope with like just your downtime? Are you drawing more? I know you got the sketch duels we've been doing on Facebook Live. That's been pretty cool. It's been pretty fun. Seems to be still on a roll, I guess you could say. So that's been going on. How is the comic creating going for you?
Comic creative is good. I'm working on the next story I'm doing as a short story for the Raid anthology, the next one. It's very different. It's, for me, it's a lot of interiors, you know, a lot of like, you know, perspective and right angles and stuff like that. And it's a lot of the story is kind of just a lot of like talking head type stuff. So, you know, you got to play around with the angles and the different shots to sort of make it visually interesting while this is happening. So I've been like doing a lot of research on certain artists that do that stuff really well, like someone like Eduardo Risso or something like that. He does that stuff very well, I thought. So, you know, stuff like that, I'm trying to make it as interesting as possible. And I'm working with, his name's Andrew Healy. He's a writer. He's part of Raid, and I think we have a really cool story put together. So that's my next thing that's keeping me busy right now, and you know, stuff. My dog getting skunked.
Oh yeah, that's right. Last weekend, right?
you know, last Friday she got skunked for the second time in 2 years.
Man, she's just the thug. Riley's that dog that's just, she'll just go anywhere. She'll fight any animal.
This was crazy because she, I thought, you know, last year she got skunked and like she never even got the skunk. She got blasted right before she was about to bite it. So she's like, I thought she might learn a lesson or something like that, but she saw this skunk and she ran towards it and just picked it up and started, like, I don't know if she killed it or not, but she was shaking the hell out of this thing and it went flying. And as she got sprayed, like she didn't get sprayed as bad, but she still stinks. She was down by the brickworks today and she got wet and it kind of reactivated the skunk smell that's still on her. It's going to take a while for that to go away, but she stinks.
Maybe she thought it was the same skunk that got her last time, so she was out for revenge.
No, she's got a huge prey drive, man. As soon as she sees a small animal like that, like, nothing I say matters. I was trying to grab her before she ran off to do it, and, like, just nothing matters. She goes into the hunting zone.
What's half of, she mixed, right?
Yeah, but we don't know for sure what's what. I think she's, like, we speculate, but she's definitely, like, got some hound in her, like, the way she acts. She's very hound-like, and she's kind of got a bit of the floppy ears like a hound. She looks like a hound mixed with, like, a pit bull or something like that.
Yeah, because she's kind of got that strong body, like, that core strength to her that feels kind of like a pit bull. Yeah,
she's got a strong jaw like a pit bull. Like, I can pick her right up off the ground when she's biting a rope and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But she's always hunting. Like, she's always got her nose down smelling like a hound dog. So, she's some sort of weird mix.
That is quite the mix, though, for a dog who can sniff something out and then has the jaw strength of a pit bull. Like, good grief. So that was your weekend last weekend. But one of the things that I wanted to do with you that we never got a chance to do was go to Raekwon's barber shop / Wu-Tang shop.
Yeah, in Toronto. I was thinking about that the other day.
Yeah. I was like, man,
we met after this.
I know, right? Because it was one of those places that seemed like the storefront was almost purposely nondescript. So you had to, like, know that it was there. Like, those in the know about it. And then it's like this magical Wu-Tang shop in Toronto that I never heard of. And you showed me the pictures of it. I'm like, man, are we ever going to get a chance to go there? I mean, that would be super dope. But, man.
I wanted to go buy some Wu-Tang gear or whatever the hell they sell there.
Would you get your haircut there?
What's that?
Would you get your hair cut there?
Well, I cut my own hair. Like, I just shave my head. I'm not going to pay $45 for someone to shave my head. But I'd see if they get, like, a beard trim or something like that. Or yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I just wanted to... They sell merch there, so I thought maybe we could get some cool, like, Ghostface or Raekwon merch or something like that.
Do you have, like...
But I just wanted to check it out.
Yeah, me too. That's pretty awesome. Do you have, like, a window of time that is your, like, your Wu-Tang window of taking in the music, or are you just an ongoing fan? Whenever someone puts out something from Wu-Tang, you check it out?
I'll say, like, in the last 10 years, I've stopped listening to most hip-hop, new or old. Like, I like the stuff I already know, but if Ghostface puts out a new album, I'm probably not going to listen to it. I might, but, like, I think the last Wu-Tang album I was really into was the... I think it came out in 2012. It was Raekwon, Meth, and Ghost. It was called Wu Massacre. Do you know that album?
Yeah, I got that album.
Oh, it's so good. And that was probably the last thing I really liked. Because I remember when the... what was the one that came out in 2008? Was it like the 8 Diagrams or something like that?
Yeah, I never listened to that one.
I didn't like it. Because for me... Like I was a big Wu-Tang fan from the beginning. Like, as soon as 36 Chambers came out, that was, like, growing up in Scarborough, we were all, like, in the ghetto. Like, that was a huge, huge album for us. So I loved Wu-Tang since then. But when they started venturing off and doing their own, like, solo albums, you start to realize that, like, and, you know, you listen to, like, the W and then, Iron Flag is probably their last, like, half decent album, but none of them are nearly as good as, like, 36 Chambers. And you realize that, like, they're not really a real group. It's just a bunch of, like, guys that were put together and sort of, like, it's like three different cliques essentially that formed, like, a super group that was Wu-Tang. Mm-hmm. But when people are, like, excited about a Wu-Tang reunion song, you're like, I don't know, man. Like, they're not really on the same page anymore. They're all kind of doing very different things these days. And, like, it's not 1993 anymore. Like, Ghostface, RZA, GZA, like they're all doing very different things these days. So I don't get too excited for like a reunion album. I'd rather just listen to like a solo album or something like that.
Yeah. I kind of got into Wu-Tang later. I missed the original like inception of the group. I was too young to really appreciate it. And as I got older, I appreciated like Wu-Tang Forever more than when it had come out. There's a lot of like inside stuff with Wu-Tang Clan that there's a payoff to it when you kind of know what they're referencing. And even just the lingo between Ghostface and Raekwon, it's so like cryptic in a way that if you don't know some of their slang, it'll just be like, I don't get anything that they're talking about. This is beyond just rap riddling. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not just a punchline. They have coded words on purpose. But as I got older, I kind of appreciated it more than I did when I was young.
Yeah, and half the time, like, Ghostface is talking about nonsense. You're like, what the hell is kind of gibberish is Ghostface talking about right now?
But it all makes sense in a weird way. I don't know if that makes sense. As gibberish as it is.
Just, this is off topic, but since we were just talking about my dog, she's lying in the bed right here next to me, and she's sleeping, and she had a big day of chasing ducks down at the brickwork, so she's, like, running in her sleep, and her paws are twitching, and she's clearly, like, reliving the trying to hunt those birds today, so it's pretty funny just watching her.
Does she dream often?
What's that?
Does Riley dream often? Because Kobe dreams constantly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Whenever she has, like, an incident where she sees a raccoon or something she can get close to, like, hunting-wise, she definitely has dreams, I think, where she's chasing them because she's twitching right now and kind of running in her sleep a little bit, and it's pretty funny.
Has she ever gotten up running? Have you ever seen that video of the dog who got up?
He runs into the wall?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that video. No, she's never gotten that far, but she will wake up and look very, like, lost, like she just got out of another dimension.
Yeah, I've seen my dog Kobe wake up sometimes where you can hear like a slight howl start and then a full-on howl occurs and she's still in her sleep in her dream state, but her head is lifted up to the sky and she's just doing the deepest howl, and then she as I look at her doing it, she'll look at me like, what the hell was that? Who was that?
She's part wolf, man.
But yeah, that's it. But she never...
I guess technically they all are.
They all are, yeah. But she's it's only in her sleep that she's ever done a howl like that. It's so funny.
I like the howl.
Yeah, me too.
Riley will do. I've seen her sleep bark sometimes where she's kind of like... and she's like barking at something in her dreams, and it's pretty great.
Does she ever show teeth when she sleeps?
No, not really.
Kobe's been doing that recently, like actually snarling, and I'm kind of scared to wake her up because I don't know if what her reaction will be, but... She's such a chill dog that so far she's been good, but there's been a couple times where she's shown her teeth, and I'm like, whoa, okay.
She's got another side to her.
Yeah, there's the dark side coming out.
Why are dogs so much cuter when they're sleeping? I don't understand.
I don't know, but they're adorable.
Like, as soon as she's asleep, I'm like, she's the cutest thing on earth.
Yeah, because they're like your little baby, because you see the innocence in them, right? Like, oh, you're harmless now, but then when they wake up and they're just begging for food or... making a mess of stuff. You're like, can't you go back to sleep? Like, you're perfect there.
You should have seen her today, man. She was having a blast chasing. There's ducks, and then there was this bird I'd never seen before. It's like a black, like, water bird. It's called a cormorant, and it's like a fishing bird. It's not. It's kind of like a loon, but it's not a loon, and there was, like, tons of them down there at the brickworks.
Did she catch any?
No, she tried to. She can't even get close. She hates water. She wants to jump in after them, but she hates going in water, so she can't really get close to them.
Oh,
but,
really?
Yeah, okay. She hates water. She doesn't swim.
Okay.
Well, she can swim. She doesn't want to. She hates it.
That's so funny how some dogs just absolutely love being in water, and there's others that treat it like a cat. Like, they hate it with everything, every fiber of them.
Yeah. But, man, we saw... a giant snapping turtle today. I was so happy. Any day I get to see a bunch of turtles, I'm super happy.
Why?
It was a good day.
Why is that?
Because I like turtles.
Okay. What were we talking about before? Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah, we were talking about Wu-Tang, but I just want to talk about dogs and turtles for a bit.
That's fine. You can keep
talking. Get out of my system, you know?
Did you ever have turtles growing up?
No. I wanted them, though. But, The closest I got was one summer I spent up north at my dad's friend's place, and I caught a big turtle, like a decent turtle. Like, his shell was probably like an 8-inch diameter or something like that. It was like a red painted turtle, and they had a kiddie pool thing, and I put it in the kiddie pool, and I was like, this is my new pet. I'm going to keep this turtle. And then, like, my dad's friend, after like a few hours, kind of convinced me, like, yo, man, maybe that turtle will be happier if you set him free. And I was like, yeah, let's set him free. And I brought him over to the dock, and I, like, put him in the lake. And this fucking turtle was, like, a bat out of hell. He ran so fast away from me. He just got in the water and just swam for his life. We're just like, see ya. That was the closest I had to getting a turtle.
Were you a Ninja Turtles fan as a kid? Did that add to your love of turtles?
I was a Ninja Turtles fan, but I liked turtles before that. Turtles are just so fucking cool. Turtles are just like, they're just one of those animals. They're like sharks and alligators, where they're like so prehistoric, especially like a snapping turtle or an alligator snapping turtle. They look so prehistoric and cool. And just like, I don't know, man, something about turtles really makes me happy.
That's so funny. Of all the animals, turtles. That's cute.
Shane. Yeah, it's like, I went to the Humane Society one time. This is before I got a dog, when I was thinking about getting a dog, and we did a little tour of the Humane Society, and there's like another part where there's like rabbits and different animals, and they have these big like tanks with these turtles in them, and they're like 18, 20 years old, because people buy those little baby turtles and they think they're going to stay that size, but they get way bigger, and then people just get rid of them, and turtles live for a long time. So they just have these tanks filled with like 20-year-old turtles that are just chilling. And I'm like, this tank is huge and great for this turtle in the Humane Society. If I adopted it, I couldn't give it a better home. Like, it would have to downsize if I like decided to adopt this turtle. So I'd never get the turtle, but I want to. I'd love to just be surrounded by turtles.
Yeah, it would be, if you did get that turtle, it would just be like decoration almost for you to have it than for where it is.
I'd have to get a tank the size of like my bathtub for it to be like equally happy the way it's chilling at Humane Society.
Right.
No turtle. Anyways, hip hop, Wu Tang.
Yeah, well, okay, continue. Do you have a favorite Wu Tang solo album?
Yes. Hold on, let me think. I'm trying to decide. I mean, it's definitely a Ghostface album, but it's. I'm trying to decide whether I like Iron Man or Supreme Clientele more.
Yeah, It really comes down to those.
For me, it's probably, if I had to choose, maybe Iron Man. Because, like, I love Supreme Clientele, but I'm not always in the mood for Supreme Clientele. It's got a sound from that time. And, like, they were doing, you know, like, Cherchez Le Ghost, so stuff that's, like, very different than a Wu-Tang stuff, which I love. But I'm not always in the mood for that. And I think, like, Iron Man with, like, songs like Iron Maiden and stuff, I always love that stuff. To me, that's just like classic era, like early Wu-Tang stuff. So I think if I had to choose, I'd go with like Iron Man.
And I feel like Iron Man is the sequel to Only Built for Cuban Links. Like, they go kind of hand in hand.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much, yeah. Actually, like, Only Built for Cuban Links is great too. Yeah, but yeah. It's pretty much the sequel to that, you're right.
It's just the main star kind of flips, but they're equally on both of those albums. They're almost like duo albums in a way.
Yeah, they're not solo albums really at all.
Yeah, I got onto Only Built for Cuban Links real late in my hip hop, like listening. I don't know what you would call it, not career, but just in my listening. And I know a lot of people had heralded it as one of like the best albums of all time, and I kind of missed that boat. Going back to it, it definitely deserves that rank of classic. But I always kind of felt like Raekwon was a little bit overrated, because he's best known for Only Built for Cuban Links. And after that, there's not much in his catalog that makes you say, and then there was this, and then there was that thing. Everything about Raekwon is really tied down to that first album and the Wu-Tang like albums. Which it says a lot.
Yeah, I agree. Like, for as far as like his solo, like his own song, like Only Built for Cuban Links is the one. Like, well, he did Only Built for Cuban Links 2, and it was like a very disappointing album.
Some people loved it though. Some people were like, it's a return to form. It had moments, but it didn't resonate with me.
But yeah, like, but for me, it's like I love Raekwon on ghost songs. I love him on the group songs and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's overrated. I love Rae Kwan. I think he's great.
No, he's definitely great at what he does, but there was a time where he was being, like, put in the same league as people like Nas and people like Biggie. And I guess maybe for that era, he was that guy. But it didn't, like, by the time his second album came out, what was it? I don't even remember what it was called. Immobility? It was just like, this is such a weird album. Didn't even feel like a Wu-Tang-related album at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, out of the Wu-Tang guys, like, lyrically, it's like everyone kind of regards, like, GZA as the best lyricist in the group, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like with GZA, he is probably the best lyrically, very, like, they refer to, you know, like, sharp, like the Ginsu or the, you know, the Blade. But you kind of know what he does, whereas with Ghostface, it's a little bit of an unpredictable aspect to him of where he might take a song as far as story. Yeah, and I think that's what keeps him fresh and keeps him relevant in a lot of ways. But yeah, Liquid Swords, I love that album. That's another one that
those. Yeah, that's another of like the all time classic, especially for like solo albums of Wu-Tang is.
Yeah, those first years of everyone releasing a solo, it's hard to really pick one that is better than.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, that's like Wu-Tang wasn't even really. They're not a true like group.
They were
a super group essentially of like three cliques that all like, you know, the Staten Island guys and like. So yeah, I think that's why they shine a lot more when they're doing their solo albums.
Which part of those cliques did you think that Method Man fit into? Because he was everywhere. He was like the superstar.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And he also did his own thing with Redman too, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I kind of like, yeah, sometimes it feels like you've gone off into his own thing, but then you hear that album like Wu Massacre and you're like, man, they all flow so well together. Like, I still think of like, yeah, I guess he doesn't, for me, the clique I sort of like him to do is like Ray, Ghostface, and like sometimes it's Meth, but like I love Capadonna. I think he's the most underrated Wu-Tang guy because he doesn't get credit because he wasn't on the 36 Chambers because he was in jail, so people don't regard him as like a real Wu-Tang member. But Capadonna is one of my all-time favorites, so I don't know. I feel like that little clique is like Kappa, Ghost, and Raekwon for me.
Yeah, that's a good one. And they were pretty much the trio for Iron Man. Like, that's...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the trio there. Yeah, I think...
It's also, I was watching the video for... you ever see the video for Ice Cream?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, and all they have all... It, like, it, they'd never get away with it these days. It's, like, so sexist. Like, the women are wearing T-shirts with, like, the different ice cream flavors on them and stuff like that. And, like, it's literally the whole song's just about fucking girls and the different flavors of ethnicity. Like, it's... But Capadonna is wearing this, like... he's wearing, like, a Montreal Canadiens hockey jersey.
Yeah.
And he has this, like... It's like a handkerchief tied around his like neck, but very tightly, and it looks like he's wearing like a neck brace or something like that. Like, it's the weirdest style choice, and every time I watch it, I'm just like, is he like injured? Why is that wrapped so tightly around his neck? But it's so funny to me, and I love that video.
Yeah, no, hockey jerseys were a thing for a little bit in hip hop videos. Snoop Dogg used to rock the hockey jersey frequently.
Yeah, man,
he used to wear a Pittsburgh Penguins jersey. That, yeah. It's so funny to think back on that.
The hockey jersey and the football jersey to me are always like weird because like they're designed to have like thick gear underneath, so they always look like kind of odd just wearing it as a shirt. But as like a baseball jersey or a basketball jersey as like a tank top, those fit and they just make sense. But like, yeah, like a hockey jersey, you're just like, it looks so weird because you don't have pads and stuff underneath it.
It's true. Looking back to when I used to wear that was how I used to dress. I'm kind of like, man, it is a somewhat a sign of like immaturity to still to go out dressed up and putting on your finest football jersey or your authentic hockey jersey, and you're like, you're right, it's meant to be worn with padding underneath, like it's meant for equipment designed for it.
Yeah, it just looked kind of silly. I don't know.
Absolutely, it's funny when you look back.
Especially if you wear a Canadian jersey and a white towel tied tightly around your neck.
Maybe he had a neck injury.
Maybe you know what I'm talking about? Can you picture it? Like, do you know the video?
I know the video. I know the jersey. I'm going to look it up right now.
And see look at exactly. It. It's so funny, like, because he's rapping and his verse is so good, but I'm just like, and they cut back and forth from scenes, so there's like, he's wearing something else in another scene, but the one where he's wearing a Canadian jersey, it's just like, you're like, it's not a neck brace, this is a style choice, but it looks like he's injured, and I don't know why it's like, it's just so funny to me, and I have no idea why.
Okay, I'm going to look it up right now.
Yeah, look it up. Is Liquid Swords or Only Built for Cuban Links? What's your favorite solo Wu-Tang album?
My favorite solo artist for like a Wu-Tang album would probably be Supreme Clientele out of all of them. But out of the debuts, which I feel are as good as anything that they released, that's tough, man. It really depends on the mood I'm in. I kind of lean towards, I think, Liquid Swords a little bit because it's got a couple of jams on there. It's a shorter album, and there's a couple of songs on there like Shadowboxing with Method Man and Fourth Chamber that I just love. I love those songs so much. So I'm almost always in the mood to listen to those songs. Doesn't matter the type of playlist I might put together, I'll always want to put those songs on there.
Yeah, that's fair.
But Only Built for Cuban Links, like Criminology and Verbal Intercourse and Incarcerated Scarface, like,
yeah,
it's so good.
Do you listen to the playlist I made you?
No, but I made one. Did you make me one? I did, and I just needed to share. Remember I asked you that time? Like, I need to. How do I figure out how to share it? But I did end up making one. And it your playlist inspired me to make a bunch of different playlists for work. So,
oh, nice.
Because I knew a lot of the songs on there. And then some of the songs that you had, I'm like, well, I want to put that on a playlist, but I can't because I'm just doubling up. My video for Raekwon Ice Cream is not playing for some reason. I'm not sure why.
I don't know. So you didn't listen to my playlist, but it inspired you to make your own playlist. Absolutely. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, because then I wanted to make you a playlist. But see, I don't listen to...
So where's my playlist? I want to listen to your playlist that you made for me.
I'll send it to you. I just got to log in and send it to you. But you'll probably... I've been making different themed playlists at work, and one of them was all DJ Premier beats. I don't know if you saw... there's this thing happening right now during this like quarantine time where Swiss Beats and Timbaland have started this thing called Versus. And every weekend or every 2 weekends, they'll have an artist go up against another classic artist. And
did Ludacris and Nelly just do one?
They just did one yesterday. I didn't watch that one.
Okay, I saw someone talking about that. So yeah.
Yeah, but they had one. They had one with like Jill Scott and Erykah Badu, which was really cool.
Okay, and I saw something about that too. I think you posted maybe something about that.
Yeah, I posted something about that one. But the cool one, the one that got me really excited, was DJ Premier versus RZA. That was super dope. Yeah, that's like right up my alley, right? And every song on there was just a banger, like pure classic hip-hop. And going through RZA's playlist, you realize how much... I mean, it is a smaller window than DJ Premier, because DJ Premier produced just about everybody.
Yeah.
But going through, like, it was very hard to decide. I thought it was going to be a clean win for Premier because he did songs with Nas and Biggie, and just about everybody wanted a Premier beat at one point in time. But when you go through that Wu-Tang era and just the hit after hit after, it's like every song is fire. Every song.
Yeah. Well, I guess you think of, like, you automatically go to, like, RZA. You think of, like, RZA solo albums, and, like, there's a lot of whack shit on, like, RZA solo albums, so you don't give him as enough due, and then you hear all the other ones. You're like, oh, yeah, he did that, he did that, he did that.
He produced all of these albums. Like, he produced all of Only Built for Cuban Links and Liquid Swords and the whole entirety of, you know, 36 Chambers. You're like, damn, there's a lot of dope tracks on there.
You ever heard that RZA song called, I think it's called Domestic Disturbance or Domestic Violence or something like that?
No.
And it's literally just like the whole song is just, it's kind of a rap song, but it's just him and this girl like fighting and rapping. And like, it literally sounds like they're rapping like a domestic, like violent, like domestic assault, like a couple fighting. It sounds crazy, but it's like pretty great. It's like whack. It's not like a great song, but it's different.
It's a cool concept.
It's weird, yeah. Like, I don't think you'd be, like, blasting this too loud here, the neighbors here, because it literally sounds like a couple fighting, but it's, like, the idea of turning that into a song is kind of funny.
Yeah, there's some songs that are great ideas, and then once you've heard it, like, once or twice, unless you're listening to the album and it's part of the theme of the album, there's certain replay value to it that just doesn't... Thinking of one, like, I never really enjoyed the Eminem song Kim. Do you remember that one? Where it's just him...
No, I was never a big Kim Eminem fan. It's about his ex-wife or whatever.
Every song seems to be about his ex-wife, but this one was one... So he had a song on his first album called Just the Two of Us, with where he's talking to his daughter, but he killed his wife and she's in the trunk, so he's explaining to his baby, like, this is what we're gonna do right now, and don't worry, don't be scared, we're gonna take mama to the dock and she's gonna go for a swim. And it's very, like, creepy and dark, but it's clever in how it's done, right? And then on the next album is the song where he actually is in a fight with his baby mom and kills her, and I never had the stomach for it. After I heard it the first time, I'm like, okay, like, you followed through on that concept, but this is some really dark stuff. And I can never listen to the people who can replay that song. I'm just like, I don't know, man. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, I think like this domestic violence I'm talking about, it falls into sort of the same category where you're like, it's kind of interesting if, like, I'm with the boys and, like, we all know the song, we'll throw it on and laugh, but, like, it's like, because there's some funny lines in there.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Overall, you're like, I don't know. Like, I don't want people... Like, I wouldn't put this on at a party. It just sounds like a guy and a girl fighting.
Yeah, was it on his solo albums? Like, the RZA, Bobby Digital?
Yeah, for the life of me, I cannot remember which album it was, but it was, yeah, one of his, like, solo tracks.
Yeah.
It's worth to listen to once, though. There's, like, yeah, some funny lines on there where, like, she's, like, talking about how, like, he comes so quick. He's like, yeah, you guys, well, I come so quick because I'm just trying to get this shit over with. Get some sleep.
Yeah, it sounds like a RZA. It definitely sounds like a RZA thing. So, one thing I've really enjoyed being at home for that first couple of weeks was how often Seinfeld is played on TV still.
Is it still? Because I don't watch TV at all, so I just watch it, like, on my computer. But yeah,
they got, like, six episodes on a day, man. It's great.
Yeah, it's always on. Well, I think that's why they're still making so much money. The syndication is so strong.
And they look nice and crisp. Like, on other channels, they'll play, like, some of those other shows from that same era, and they look like they're straight off of a tube TV. It's like, ugh, why does this show look so much older than it is? They put Seinfeld back on. Like, Frasier.
I mean, other than the fact that, like, a lot of the plots of Seinfeld could be fixed now with just if they had a cell phone, other than that, it's kind of, like, timeless, you know, a lot of the stuff they do. Like, there's not a lot of, like, you know, like, the famous figures that do show up in there, like, there's not a lot of, like, it's not that dated, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's the one with the non-fat yogurt. They're talking about, like, Mayor Dinkins, who, like, that's, like, way back in, like, New York's history, so it feels a lot longer. But, like, other than that, they don't really, like, it doesn't feel that dated, and I feel like a lot of them still, like, the plots and the jokes still are good today. Although a lot of people are saying that a lot of their jokes, because of, like, PC culture, wouldn't, like, hold up today anymore.
Yeah, I don't care for that sort of argument. Like, it kind of irritates me, because if it wasn't for Seinfeld jokes, a lot of those issues wouldn't have even been breached or addressed. So it seems...
Yeah, exactly.
It seems inappropriate, but at the time, they were making a lot of headway in areas where people weren't even comfortable to talk about, you know, a lot of the things, like in the Master of Your Domain episode, they did something so clever that the audience totally knew what they were talking about that was completely taboo, but even to have Elaine in on it was unconventional at the time. So if you're going to watch it in 2020 and criticize it from 2020 standards, I feel like that's a little bit irresponsible. Like, you're not being fair to it.
Yeah, and I think, like, the definitely, like, the episode, like, where the outing, I think it's called, where it's like, we're not gay, not that there's anything wrong with that, and people are kind of looking back on it kind of like, well, they're kind of, like, ridiculing gay people and stuff like that, but it's so ahead of its time for them to be like, people don't realize in the early 90s, like, it still wasn't very okay to be gay, and especially not on mainstream TV. Like, at this point, Ellen hadn't come out on her sitcom, so I guess, so saying, like, it, like, well, we're not gay, but there's nothing wrong with being gay, even that was, like, ahead of its time to do that. So, I, like, in my opinion, without an episode like that, whether you think it's ridiculing gay people or not, or whatever, I don't think it is, but without something like that, maybe you don't get the big moment where Ellen comes out of the closet on her sitcom, or you get a show like Will and Grace. Like, maybe those don't happen without Seinfeld kind of pushing more for that type of thing, right?
Yeah, it has to be out there in the consciousness. Like, we can look back at, me and my wife have this discussion all the time about, you look back at how certain demographics and groups of people in the United States, or just people of color, are portrayed on some of these shows, and the things that they got away with saying that are just like, oh my goodness, you can't say that, or you can never get away with that today. And you think to yourself, yeah, but back then, you know, there was a lot of things that we hadn't even, where people thought what the norms were back then. You've got to kind of put yourself into that time and think about how forward thinking this was, because back then you wouldn't be able to have two men kissing on TV, whereas today have two men kissing, but you can't say certain things. So those things had to kind of go through that time in order for it to be what it is today.
Yeah. And I think people also, what gets lost a lot of the time is, sometimes they're like, so the episode where the cigar store Indian, I don't know if you remember that one, Jerry, it's like Jerry is looked like he looks like he's a racist because he buys a cigar store Indian, and then Kramer walks by and then does the, and he's doing the whole like trying to find ways not to say like he bought the tickets from a scalper or like an Indian giver and that type of thing. And then there's that joke where he asks the mailman if he knows where this Chinese restaurant is, and the guy's like, "Why? It's because I'm Chinese." And he's like, "No, because you're a mailman." And people don't realize, like, they think that, like, oh, they're just doing racial humor, but it's, they're making fun of racial humor. Like, you know what I mean? They're making fun of, like, doing that type of thing. And I feel like there's no nuance anymore with stuff like that, where people, there was a big backlash I was reading about on Twitter, where there's a lot of, like, younger Gen Z people now that are discovering that Robert Downey Jr. did blackface in Tropic Thunder in 2008 when it came out, and they're like, how come he's never been in trouble for this? Like, he did blood, and it's like, you've never seen the movie, you don't even get the context of it. He's making fun of actors that go too far into their own character. Like, it's not him, just, he's not doing blackface like the old school, like you know, the way they did it, and it was like racist terms. He's making fun of people like going too far in that one direction. So, and people don't really understand like nuance of stuff like that. So it's like, it's really hard to touch these days because everyone just wants like a headline and runs with it. And it's like, that's not really what this is about. You know what I mean?
I think you're right. This generation of people have been trained so much to be uber sensitive that it's almost like become a hobby in a way to find things that we should be upset about or become upset about that we weren't upset about before. Like, the perfect example is with that Robert Downey Jr. thing and the Seinfeld episode about the cigar store Indian, where it's a commentary on us as people. Like, this is stuff that we do. And this is how do we talk about these things that make us uncomfortable, or pointing out how stupid we can be as people is what Seinfeld is really about, right? Like, real comedy is making fun of our own stupidity.
Yeah.
And so if you miss the nuance, it's part of the joke.
So I got a question for you. Yeah. Have you watched Seinfeld's new stand-up special on Netflix?
I have, and I laughed really hard.
What do you give it out of 10?
Oh, man. I'd have to watch it again. I'd probably give it like a 7.5. I'd score it well.
I hate it.
Why do you hate it? I feel like it's classic.
I give it a 4 out of 10.
Why?
Well, I think part of it is I saw him a couple of years ago when he was in Toronto, and it was, I guess he was building this hour that he's doing, because I mean, he hasn't put together a special since, I'm telling you, for the last time, which I think is 2001 or something like that. And that was like him retiring all his material that he'd done up in that point, and which a lot of that material was like, you know, cold openings for Seinfeld. But he put this together, and So I've seen a lot of it already, so I don't think that helps. But it's also, he comes out and did, like, you know me, man, I'm the biggest Seinfeld fan. He's one of my favorites of all time. I love the show. I love him, his stand-up. I love his book, Sign Language. So I really wanted to like this, but I just, he's like shouting the whole time, kind of like how Chris Rock shouts, but it just doesn't work for him. And I'm just like, why is Jerry Seinfeld shouting his act at us this entire hour? Like, he's like really hyper about it, but like, there's no need to be. And with a lot of the jokes, I'm like, I think this would be funnier if he was like calmed down and sort of pacing himself a little bit better. I don't know. I just, a lot of the jokes I didn't find that great, and his delivery was not so great on this.
I think that part is why I score it where I do, because I found what he was saying funny, but the kind of incredulous approach and everything was, it was almost too much. He used to save those moments before.
Yeah, and I don't think it helps that this came out during, I mean, this is not his fault anyway, but, you know, during this pandemic where everyone's stuck at home. And a good chunk of his bits, especially the beginning, is like talking about going out and doing stuff. And it's like, he literally, like, he opened with like, we're going out. This is what out is. We want to go out. Like, this is it. And you're like, well, this doesn't really work well. Everyone's not going anywhere. Like, it's not, like, obviously it's relatable, but you're like, it's kind of not well-timed, the fact that everyone's not going anywhere.
What I did like the comparison between sucks and great. That part I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, he's done that type of stuff before, which I think is, like, he did, his wordplay is really good.
Yeah.
But part of it, too, is I feel like it's just, kind of feels like it's a bit dated. Like, he's sort of just an old comic now doing kind of stuff he did in the 90s and hasn't really evolved too much. Like, as much as I love that stuff in the 90s and the early 2000s, and like, now I'm watching it, I'm just like, it just doesn't have the punch and feel. Like, in today's age, it just doesn't do it for me the way it used to.
It's very, you can anticipate it. You know where he's going. He's like, oh, okay, he's going to take left and right and do something with the juxtaposition and the opposites of it and outside and inside. And, like, you know that he's going to find that shtick with the wordplay. Yeah. And so it's funny, but you also know that this is what he does. It's kind of like Russell Peters with the accents. It's funny, but after a while, it's like, okay, what else you got?
Yeah, but I think if it's done right, like, I can watch any Carlin, early Carlin, to, like, way up until he died. Like, Carlin to me is probably the best stand-up of all time. Like, he's just so fucking brilliant. But while he does this very clever wordplay and makes these lists and runs them down, like, rapid fire, and, like, plays with words and does all this stuff, it's super clever, but at the same time, it's always funny. Like, it's never just clever. It's like he has a way of making it hilarious while he's making it super clever. And I feel like someone like Carlin did it much better. And, like, Seinfeld's, I don't know, just to me, it feels, like, dated. And I can watch any Carlin stuff anytime, and I'm always like, this is timeless for me, and it makes sense. You realize how far ahead of his time he is, because you're like, oh, that's very relevant. What he was saying in 91 is very relevant in 2020.
Yeah, but that's, I think, also because sometimes Carlin, as funny as he was, there was a truth to him actually making commentary on things in life. So
exactly. He was 100% genuine in talking about this stuff.
Right. I think that adds to the relevancy and timelessness of it.
You know what I just found out too, that I thought was pretty funny? He had a special that he recorded on September 10th, 2001, that was delayed in coming out, and they had to change the name. So it was recorded right before September 11th, and it was called I kind of like it when a lot of people die. That was the title of it. So they eventually released it, but they hadn't changed the name and everything yet, but I think that's something about that's so funny. It's like if they tried to release something like that today, you're like, oh, look what's going on. We can't release that.
Right. Yeah. It's true. I will say that the Seinfeld, I found it funnier because I also had a little bit to drink before I watched it and while I watched it. So I caught a giggle, it stuck around with me. Because I think Daph is kind of, she likes Seinfeld stand-up, but I think she's on the in the same rating category as you, saying like he was screaming too much. Like I'm kind of tired of him screaming at me.
So yeah, he shouts the entire thing. It's almost exhausting.
Yeah, that's what she had said too. So she kind of agreed with. She laughed, but I was definitely had a case of the giggles, and I think it was because I had a glass of scotch and maybe more than I should have.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, I was thinking about too because I was talking about how the Seinfeld thing is all about going out and like. I've talked to you about Nate Bargatze. He's like my favorite comic right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has a great joke, and it works well with like the quarantine thing. And he's like talking about he did a show in prison. He's like, I went to the prison. He's like, and I'm up on the stage. I'm doing my stupid jokes, and none of them are working because they're all about like being outside in the past 30 years. And then I'm like, hey guys, you remember traffic? You know what traffic's like, right? And it's just like perfectly relevant for what's going on today.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what people come out with after all of this, because so many comics, like none of them can do their job right now. And so much of what they do is based off of trying things out at the comedy clubs, right? So if they can't go to these things regularly and basically work out, when they do go back, what kind of content will they have having been with their families and their kids and you know, kind of going crazy just reading the news? I'll be very interested to see what kind of stuff they come up with. It should be good.
Well, I think like part of this, and it's not just about like comics, it also works for, you know, like, you know, you're seeing things now where like I saw some, they're going to do like a music concert, but it's going to be like a drive-in style. And so you're like, I think this kind of forces people to try and be creative and find different ways of doing stuff. So like if you're a comedian that wants to go and work out material, like you have the internet, you're very connected to the world. Maybe you can't do it the way you classically did it, but you can find different ways to do stuff. And maybe people will be sort of like more entrepreneurial and might bring out new ways of doing things and new mediums of stuff. Like, who knows? Like, I don't love a good Zoom meeting. Like, I don't like that at all. But people are doing really inventive and interesting stuff because of what we're going through. So honestly, I think like the really talented and entrepreneurial and smart people will figure out ways to do things and create new stuff.
Do you think comedy works though without an audience? Like I know making people laugh can be done in so many different formats, but I feel like with stand up specifically, there's definitely a response and an energy that you get from the crowd that kind of can dictate how your performance goes. Do you know what I mean? To know what actually works.
I know exactly
works.
What you mean. I agree 100%. I'm not saying I have the answer or I know how to do it. I'm saying that people are out there. There's tons of people that can't do what they normally do. So they're going to be looking at trying different ways to do it. And there might be some really great stuff that comes out of it. There might be some garbage. Like I've watched some of the Saturday Night Live stuff that they're doing. Like everyone's isolated doing their own stuff from like their home. And like, it's just not working, but it's cool that they're trying that.
Yeah. I think that's the key, right? In the, what do they say? Like whenever there's some sort of a problem, the way that we solve it is where, you know, that amazing part of humanity comes out. It's like we're given a problem, we've found our way around it, we've learned how to deal with it, and that's what makes us special, is that we solve these problems and create. So yeah, definitely, for sure. You said you had. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to talk about Louis C.K.'s special because he put out a new special too, and he's like a pariah now, so it's not on like Netflix or anything like that. But he just released it on his website, and I was worried about like what kind of material he's going to do, if he's still going to have his edge, if he's going to be more reserved because of it. But he really pushes the boundaries on this new one. And Louis just, it feels like old Louis, like it's watching the Seinfeld special and not being too impressed. And then watching Louis's new one. And like, you know, my opinion on Louis, like I definitely think he fucked up, but I'm forgiving of the way he went about it. And I think he can, especially someone who can find, he's made a career out of like finding humor and stuff that's not humorous. So I feel like he's someone that should be giving a second chance to sort of find a way around it and a way to redeem himself and, I don't know, possibly, you know, work past this. But his new special I was dying, man. I think it's so funny.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where with everything that happened to him and his misbehavior, it's not quite as conclusive as some of the other guys who had real criminal things that they did that you definitely know what it was that happened. But in his case, there's so much stuff behind the scenes of who was in the know and what he would like. It was creepy. There's nothing to take away.
It's definitely creepy. It's definitely weird.
Definitely creepy.
But I don't think it's on the level of, like, people like to put him in the category with Bill Cosby and Harvey Weinstein. It's like, to me, it's what happened is not even close.
And yeah, and I think that it becomes one of those things where we're just throwing everything into the pot of the same thing, because it's all, you know, if it's creepy and it's misbehavior, they're all the same sort of scenarios. And there's even, like, the more you hear about it is how some of those, he was actually asking people if he could do whatever it was he was doing, which is strange. It's definitely strange.
But yeah, he's got a weird sexual kink. I don't agree with it. I don't like it, but I mean,
yeah, is it the same as you know, drugging dozens of women and them waking up with their, you know, not knowing where they are and what's happened to them? I don't think so.
No, not even close. Like, Bill Cosby is, like, on another level, like, of what he's done. But, yeah, like, I guess, I mean, people will argue, listen, like, we're two white males, so what the hell do we know? But you can only judge by your own experience, right? So I'm like, I always try to think, put myself in the victim's shoes here, right? So, like, what Louis C.K. did was, like, not right. But, I mean, he, like, realistically, he asked permission, and then they thought he was joking. They said yes. If I was in that position, I'd been like, that'd be kind of fucked up, but at least it's a funny story. But, like, I'm personally okay. Right. But, like, if, you know, you put yourself in the shoes of, like, a Weinstein or, like, Cosby victim, and you're like, that's, like I told you about that podcast, Chasing Cosby, and they go over it. They talk to all these victims, just millions, fucking, not millions, but, like, so many women that he did this to, and it's very similar. And a lot of them, there was, like, everlasting effects. It ruined their career, it ruined their life, it ruined the way they lived their day-to-day life, and, like, fucks up their relationships that they have with their husbands or whoever. Like, there's so many, so much damage that he did that caused. And I'm like, in my opinion, I'm like, yeah, maybe Louis C.K. did, like, some shady shit, but I don't know. I don't think the long lasting effects are as bad as what you know, a Weinstein or Cosby did or something like that.
Yeah, and I think somebody like and this sounds like I'm an apologist for people with ridiculous behavior. I'm not. It's just to what level do we go to where we actually hear like even someone like Roseanne, what ended up her tweet, which was stupid and ridiculous and done when she was heavily medicated because she is an admitted psychopath. Should she be as canceled as she has become for saying something stupid? To the extent, I'm not saying her tweet is fine, that you can get away with stuff like that, but to be treated in that same sort of way where these people no longer exist almost, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I can't really get behind her, like, racist tweet. I think it's really stupid, but you're
it's
right.
Stupid. Like, it's totally stupid.
And be, like, canceled. But again, it's if you're going to – the problem is we're living in a world now where you have someone like the president of the United States who does and says all of these awful things that we're saying. Like, he's literally groped, molested women. He's done – I said racist, awful things. Like, but – and then he gets to keep his job because somehow people keep supporting him in some ways. So people like – Roseanne, people like Don Cherry, they get emboldened by this stuff and they think, if he can do that, then I can do it. There's no repercussions for it. But there is repercussions because he's the president of the United States that was voted in, and he can be removed by being voted out of office. But there's no, like, when you're talking about, like, NBC, if you have a contract with NBC or Hockey Night in Canada, whatever, these are private companies that can decide whatever they want. So if they want to fire you because they think you said something racist, you can be outraged, but they have the right to do that. Like, like someone like Don Cherry, you should have been lucky that you got the job in the first place. You're kind of a fucking idiot already.
That's the thing.
I'm not going to be sad if you're saying racist stuff on TV and then you get fired for it. Like, sorry, dude. Like, you got to, in a way, you have to be more careful. But you're right. I think that we're very too quick to judge and cancel and dump people, like, immediately.
Yeah, it's to the point, like we were getting at before. There's never any sort of, not that making a racist tweet requires nuance, but we don't have any sort of, there's no, we make no distinctions with anything to the point where we're missing the points of sometimes what we're trying to fight for. Like the sensitivity is good because it's done for the sake of change, which is what we want.
Yeah.
But a Roseanne making a stupid tweet isn't quite the same as the president making that tweet, which is more damaging because Roseanne's not going to start a war, whereas this guy can. Yeah.
Well, there's also things like this is the part that really hurts me off is like, so Norm MacDonald, he had like a deal. They took his show and they gave him a deal. I think it was like with Netflix or something.
Yeah,
like that.
It was
whatever.
Weird.
He got this deal, and he was on a TV show talking about the Louis C.K. and Roseanne because he knows them both. And Roseanne was a big critic of Louis C.K. when that stuff happened, and then she had her thing canceled, and Norm actually got them to contact each other and have a conversation. And he was saying that not many people have been in their situation where they've all of a sudden had everything taken from them like that. And people misconstrued that to saying like, oh, he's defending Louis and he's defending Roseanne and they wanted to cancel his show because of it. And it's like, one, he didn't even do anything wrong. And he wasn't saying what they did was right or wrong. He was saying they are people that were very famous that all of a sudden everything was stripped from them, whether it was their own fault or not. He was saying that not many people have been in that position. That's all he was saying. Like, he's not saying like anything was right or wrong. He wasn't defending anyone. He was just like, these are people that have been, and it was just stating sort of facts, and people were like, cancel Norm because he's defending Louis C.K. and Roseanne.
Yeah,
and you're like,
yeah,
no, man, like that's not how this should work.
Yeah, we're not having actual conversations about anything. We're just coming to conclusions all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear, like, there's people where, like, you know, someone had a conversation about, like, the N-word. Like, they'd be like, oh, he was throwing the N-word around. You're like, that's not what he was doing. That's not the same thing. Like, they were having a conversation about the word or, like, you know, the validation of using it or whatever. But people are just so quick to be like, cancel them. They said something bad. Like, you know, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's rough out here sometimes. I mean, that's the wrong term. Watch me catch flack for saying that. But it's tough where our readiness to have any sort of redemption is very limited, sometimes to the point where we're missing the point of what it is that we're trying to go for. Do you know what I mean?
Well, speaking of someone who used the N-word, Mr. Michael Richards, Kramer.
Yeah.
We talked about that because he's like, I mean, he's kind of around still, but he's like, he's been through a lot of, I'm trying to just bring it back to Seinfeld, that's why.
Yes, please, bring it back to Seinfeld.
That's my segue.
That's a very good segue. We were getting pretty political there for a second.
Well, we were, because we talked about this, Joe, you've been a private conversation, we're talking about, like, Michael Richards, and I said, my point was, like, and I'll never defend what he did, like, we all know what he did, but I don't think he's a racist by doing that. I think he made a really stupid decision, and in the moment thought, this was funny in some way, and he could, like, save the set from being heckled or whatever. So I don't think, like, in no way what he did is, like, good and okay, but I don't think you see someone like that and you're just like, oh, he's a racist, because I don't think that's how it works.
So, yeah, some people do. That's the thing.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Some people do, and for a lot of...
I think he made a bad decision, is what I think.
Totally, yeah, totally. And I can't even imagine being a person who's constantly, whatever it is that you do, that sense of celebrity and power that you get. And then also with all of that power and accessibility, you also are a slave to your own fame. And people be like, oh, poor you, you're this, you're that. But I don't think anybody really understands that until they live it. Like, imagine being, I don't know if you've been watching, there's this Michael Jordan documentary, it's a Chicago Bulls documentary, mainly about Michael Jordan's career with the Bulls and all of those seasons. But it got to a point where he was, you sometimes forget how famous he was to the world. He was the most famous athlete on the planet, to the point where he could stay in the nicest hotel in the biggest suite, but there's no way that he can leave whatever cities he's in and enjoy whatever he's got. It's got to be, the whole hotel's got to be shut down, and he's got to be escorted out and hidden all the time. Like, you're constantly in hiding because you have no life. So, like, imagine all of the poor decisions that you're liable to make when you can do anything but can't do anything at the same time.
Yeah, and you're under a microscope.
Constantly. But everything you do,
like, we all do stupid stuff, and it's like you do that, but the world knows about some stupid decision you made.
And yeah, and you've got to be absolutely perfect when everyone knows that you're just really good at something. You're the best at something that people love to watch, but you're just as messed up as the next person. And with accessibility, you're only going to be more messed up because you're constantly going to be chasing that high.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't imagine living like that. And the decisions that those people make will always be greater and magnified. Like a Michael Richards, for instance, who was mainly famous for being Kramer. He tries stand-up and it doesn't go well. And what happens? Desperation.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't a stand-up. He was a physical comic. He was an actor before Seinfeld, too. He was in, like, Transylvania 65,000, UHF. He was a bigger actor, but Seinfeld maybe was where he blew up. But he was never a stand-up comic. Like, I remember seeing him on, like, Just for Laughs, like, probably early Seinfeld or before, and, like, he just wasn't a very good stand-up. So he was trying to find his place after Seinfeld, and he was just trying to do something that competes on the, like, they just did the best show of all time. So he was trying to find, like, all of them were doing different shows. They were trying to find their way, but people just want him to be Kramer, you know? And, like, you know, Jason Alexander, people just want him to be George. So it's hard to find another thing. Like, even, like, Jerry Stiller, RIP, he was on The King of Queens, but he was essentially just another version of Frank Costanza. Like, he wasn't, you know, he didn't come up with anything new. So I think, like, Kramer was on, or Michael Richards was on stage doing stand-up. He was getting heckled. He didn't know how to deal with it. He's not a stand-up comic, and he made a really, really poor choice with poor choice of words. But at the end of the day, I don't think he's, like, actually, like, a racist. I think, for me personally, it's people's actions are definitely more important, how they live their life and what they do. And you can say a lot of stupid things. It doesn't mean you're this or that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the depth that, like, in the case of him, where he took it with his comments, it was so harsh and so extreme where it's like, ooh, that sounds like some deep-seated feelings there, buddy. Like, for you to have that at the ready, almost, to react.
I don't think so. I think he was like, what can I say to hurt these guys? And keep in mind too, this is also, and again, don't get me wrong, I'm never defending his actions, I just don't truly think he's a racist, but this is also a time where it was like about 2006, this is like right as YouTube was taking off, so this is a world where not everything, like, people did a lot of stuff that wasn't filmed and recorded and saw the world to see. Like, he probably was in a nightclub trying this thing, did this stupid thing, didn't realize that someone's going to film this and put it on the internet. Like, that's still a new thing at this point when that happens, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of things probably happened in the past that we just didn't see. And now we're seeing everything because everyone carries a camera with them.
But yeah, but I think what you said is the key, right? When you look at these people, it should be the sum total of what they've done in their lives, even when they've had their horrible moments or their horrible years. Like, there's think of some of athletes and actors and people who've had bad decades of who knows what they were doing. And, like, is Robert Downey Jr. always going to be the guy that was Robert Downey Jr. of a certain era? Or is he going to be Iron Man?
Yeah, but again, I honestly think it's, like, to a point. Like, you could say Bill Cosby did a lot of great stuff, but, like, there's no looking past, like, what he did.
No.
When it's on the air. So it really depends on the offense as well, in my opinion. Like, it's not, like, in my personal opinion, like, Michael Richards did something stupid, but I don't truly think he's a racist. But, you know, you hear someone like Mel Gibson, it's like, why give this guy a second chance? He's a piece of shit. He's like an anti-Semitic, homophobe, misogynist, domestic abuser, like Holocaust denier. It's like someone like that. It's like, yeah, he's a great actor and a great director, but, like, do we need to give this guy a second chance? I truly think he believes this stuff. Like, he said some very awful things and very racist things, and I think he meant it.
Well, because there's a constant pattern, right? That's the difference, is that you look at somebody like a Weinstein and a Cosby and a Mel Gibson, and there's like a constant pattern of going down this. There's never, you never turn it around.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember what we were talking about.
For those listening, our phone conversation just cut off for a last split second, so we're just back on the line, and we're back on track now. So
Do you want to go down the Seinfeld route now, or do you want to talk more about how we hate today's hip-hop and rappers?
You know what? Let's not be negative. Let's go down the Seinfeld route, and since it's...
But I wanted to talk about it.
Okay, let's talk about rappers then. Go ahead.
Whatever. I posted this thing on Instagram today. I, like, reposted in my story, and it was literally some guy tweeted me. He literally just said, like, I just remember the good old days where people who couldn't rap didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I know so many of these, like, shitty Post Malone wannabe guys that just do everything in auto-tune, and like it upsets me that, like, back in the day we had people like Nate Dogg and like Sleepy Brown and all these different really good hook men, or they get like, you know, they bring in like singers or R&B singers and you know have Erykah Badu on a hook but now all these rappers just like sing their hooks, but like they do it in auto-tune. And it's just like, it's so bad. And I was like, why don't you just get people who can sing to sing? Why is everyone singing in auto-tune? It's just, I hate it. I'm a miserable old man.
But you know what I think part of the issue for me is, personally, is that I had to get over the fact that this isn't hip-hop the way it's hip-hop to me. Like, it's not the same type of music. We're calling it
It's not even rap. It's garbage.
That's the thing.
It's what my dad felt about gangster rap when I was listening to it in the 90s.
But he didn't like rap music, right?
Yeah.
Today it's kind of like the way I compare it with people when I talk to them, and I've maybe used this analogy before on the show. If someone's heard me say it, bear with me. But it's kind of like we grew up. Our hip hop would be comparable to, you know, the Rolling Stones, Beatles, and then you get into a more advanced version of that stuff that those guys kind of started, and then you get the Led Zeppelin and the Who and the Pink Floyd, you know, all of that stuff that's really strong. The structure of the music, all of those parts of the music are at full force of greatness. Jimi Hendrix, and you know what I'm saying? Like, these are the best guitar players. And then the next round of music that comes through is the complete antithesis of that, or of what prog rock was, and it's guys playing in punk bands who are making music that people are reacting to, and it's a lot of call and response stuff to get you hyper, but the technicality of it is no longer there. It's punk rock. It's not what those guys were playing. It's not heavy metal. Like, there's a difference. They're similar, but they're different.
I don't know, man. I just, to me, like, there is, like, I'm not a big punk guy, but I can understand and appreciate punk, and at least it still sounds like music and songs to me. And, like, what I'm hearing today, every new rap song I hear sounds like the same shitty auto-tune song. It sounds like one shitty song that never ends. Like, it doesn't sound like, it's just awful, and I hate it. And I hate, like, I've never been a big Eminem fan, but growing up, like, I appreciate his talent. I don't think he's as great of a rapper as everyone makes him sound, but whatever. That's opinion. But when 8 Mile came out, it made every fucking poor white guy think that he could be a rapper, and like everyone all of a sudden wanted to be a freestyle battler and rapper. Then you get all of a sudden these really shitty guys rapping, and they shouldn't. And now you have someone like Post Malone, who I don't care for, but I know he does have some talent, musical talent, but he looks like a fucking piece of shit. So like every guy with a fucking face tattoo is just kind of like, yo man, like I can, like, it makes people even think like more that they can do it. They're like, if this fucking loser looking dude can be like a famous guy, then I can do it. So everyone, I don't know, I just, every job I've worked in the past few years, different restaurants I've worked in, so there's always one or two Post Malone, Eminem wannabes that are like, yo man, you gotta hear my music, and it just all sounds the same. It's just like super auto-tuned, really bad rapping, and they're so passionate and confident about it, and I'm just like, I don't know, man, like, you want to support people, and they'll be, like, supportive of me, and like, yo, your art's sick, man, I'm super supportive, and I just want to be like, yeah, but you're not good at your thing, like, you shouldn't do your thing, I'm actually decent at what I do.
So
you should give up.
So, in the case of our friendship, what did you think when I told you, like, here's a song that I made? Were you like, oh, God, and not another one?
No, because I know you. I know your musical taste, and you come from a different era of this. Like, you don't. I don't think you have anything where you're auto-tuned and you're singing hooks where you shouldn't be. But what you and Haz do is it's more of what I want in hip hop. Like, I wish, like, do you know this rapper named Denzel Curry?
No, but the name sounds familiar, but I couldn't.
He's a new guy, and he's younger, and he's like, he does some of the newer stuff that I don't like, but he has some good stuff, and you can clearly see his influences of, like, the old school rappers in the late 90s and stuff. Like, you can see a lot of influence, and he's rapping, and he's not, like, singing in auto-tune and rapping in auto-tune and doing the same. He's, like, actually really good. I was very surprised, because my buddy Kyle was like, you're going to listen to this, and I was just like, great, another new hip-hop song. I immediately am going to hate it. And it was actually really good. I'll send you a video of his later. The song's called Ricky. It's really good, actually, if you like the era of hip-hop that we like.
Yeah, like, there's stuff that's still out there. A lot of people are still making music, and I think one of the cool things that I'd never thought would happen was that when we were young, if you were if you were Chuck D, by 1997, people looked at you as old. You know, your time has passed. You know, when you get to 2002, LL Cool J's too old to do this. And it never seemed like hip-hop would mature to the point where, Bruce Springsteen can still make music today and his fans will enjoy it. Or, you know, there was no, like, shelf life to...
Yeah, hip hop moves on very much quicker.
Right. Whereas now we've kind of gotten to a point where Ghostface still makes good albums. Nas can still make good music. Jay-Z put out one of his best albums a couple years ago, and these guys are now hitting 50. And we've gotten to that point where guys who we grew up with, who are even our age and almost 40, are making music, the type of music we like. It's just that the way that music, I think, is we take it in now. It's not the same as when we would be more invested in artists. Now it's kind of disposable. So we don't really know what's coming out or new. And I'm at the point, too, like you are with comic books. That's how kind of I am with hip hop. I still love it, but I am not quite into... You're not into the Marvel DC stuff, but you still love comic books. And so I still love my hip hop, but I'm not looking for that next new artist to... take me somewhere. Like, I don't care.
I think I've gotten to the point where new hip-hop, I don't want any more new hip-hop. I'll go the rest of my life without it. I'll just listen to the stuff I already know and love. I'm good.
Yeah, that's me too. But I do like, I do really, really like a Kendrick Lamar, and I do appreciate J. Cole. And I will give props where it's due. I know he's considered kind of the front runner for this whole movement, but Drake is a guy who can make music that he could still also rap. When he raps, he still has that.
That's the thing. Like, when he, like, I like some Drake verses, but, like, when he was just straight rapping, and now it's just like everything's just like auto-tuned shitty singing, and I'm like, this is not good.
Yeah, and his music is 50-50. He does both because I guess he's got an audience for both. But
people like it, obviously.
Right. So he's one of the few who I feel can breach that sort of threshold of doing both styles and being good at it. Whereas everyone's trying to mimic that to the point where I'm like, I don't care. Some people listen to Tekashi 6ix9ine and it's like, oh, did you hear the new? I'm like, why would you even listen to that idiot? Like, that guy's just an animal. Back in the day,
I don't even know anything. All I know about that guy is that didn't he go to jail and like go to court and he like gave up everyone's name and like ratted on everyone.
Yeah, like it's the craziest thing to think of, like a rapper today being still celebrated knowingly that he was a rat. Whereas,
well, I guess they don't. The snitches get stitches doesn't apply anymore.
No.
The
now they get riches.
Care about that. Yeah. I grew up in Scarborough, man. We don't fuck around. No snitching.
Yeah, and that was the big thing, too, with the music I grew up listening to. Was like,
cops come around, I don't know shit, I ain't seen shit, I ain't done shit.
Right. Exactly. The code of the street is gone. Yeah,
you know, we're real stupid all of a sudden. I don't know nothing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But
You know what, though? Speaking of Bruce Springsteen, his latest album, Western Stars, fucking amazing. Amazing album.
You see? That's what you need. You see, the artist needs to be able to grow and exist and still make music as they get older. That's the best, man.
Bruce is the best. I don't know if you know about my love for Bruce, but he's the greatest.
I did not know that you thought
Bruce Springsteen was the greatest. I mean, the Stones are still around, and I love the Stones and stuff like that, but Bruce is still making relevant albums, and he's 71 years old. He's still putting it. Like, what other classic guy is doing something like that?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. He's right. Best. Yeah. So you said to me that you had a Seinfeld this or that. Let's, do you want to keep going with the pod? You want to continue this thing? You want to wrap it?
Yeah, I got a this or that just for this.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, this is my I was inspired too because I follow like a bunch of Seinfeld accounts on Instagram, and because I just love my feed being filled with clips of Seinfeld, and one of them, it's called, I think it's just Seinfeld.episodes or something like that. They made brackets of all like the best episodes. And they had a tournament, and they had people voting on, so it'll literally be like the puffy shirt versus the mango, and you pick one and you vote. And they've narrowed it down to like, I think they're in like the semifinals now, but it's like, I get so excited to vote on these and like the episodes, like versus, and like sometimes the ones I really love, like the ones like the contests or the soup Nazi ones that are the most memorable classic, they stand out. But for me, it's like, I don't know, like I'll vote for, like I think the episode called The Gum. That's where like Lloyd Braun and him go to buy that Chinese gum, and George looks like he's going insane. To me, that's like the most brilliant episode. It's written so brilliantly, but it never wins. Like, people don't remember that as much as like, you know, the soup Nazi or something like that. So, but I get so excited. So anyways, one of those accounts showed a this or that for Seinfeld, and I thought of giving it to you because I love the this or that, but I made it longer and better, and I put a lot of thought into this because I love Seinfeld.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, so this or that here. Some of them I'll give you context of what I'm thinking here. A junior, the junior mints or the black and white cookie?
Which episode or which one would I prefer?
No, these are not. Some of them, if it's an actual, the name of an episode, then I'll tell you that. But these are mostly just like characters or phrases and stuff like that, or like these are snacks from the show. So like, well, this or that, junior mint or a black and white cookie?
Oh man, that's good. I'm gonna go black and white cookie.
Have you had a black and white cookie, a true black and white cookie, like in New York?
No, every time I go to New York, I always point it out. I go, look to the cookie, Daff, look to the cookie. And I never buy it, but I should. But every time I think of the black and white cookie, I always remember it made him sick. So I'm like, is it going to make me sick if I have it? But next time I go to New York, because I'm definitely, I've got the hunger to go to New York, especially with all the stuff that's happening, I'm getting a black and white cookie.
I made black and white cookies for one of the Seinfeld trivia nights we did, because I wanted to try it. And it's actually not truly a cookie. It's a cake cookie. So it's like, it's almost like a big cake shaped like a cookie with icing on it, but they're great.
Okay. So you can make me one then.
Yeah, I can make black and white cookies that won't make you sick.
There you go. Yeah, black and white cookies.
This is the battle of Kramer's friends. Mickey or Newman?
I think you got to go with Newman just because of the moments with Mickey are hilarious, but the Newman are numerous. And I always love the Newman episode with the JFK spoof with Keith Magic Hernandez. Magic Loogie? Yeah, that's the best.
All right, that's fair. I love Newman, don't get me wrong, but Mickey's great too. Mickey's a better person, but Newman's funnier, I think. Yeah. Or he's just had more airtime.
Yeah, I think that's it's more. There's more things to pick.
Dude, one of my favorite episodes of all time is the yada yada with like the anti-dentite stuff. And it's when Kramer and Mickey are dating those two girls, and they don't know which one likes either. And they're both, and they go to like sit down at the table, and they're fighting over the seat. Yeah. And Kramer's like, "You ladies look lovely tonight." As Mickey like rips his shirt back, and he goes flying.
Actually, now that you mentioned Mickey, one of my favorite episodes is with Mickey too, when him and Kramer are Santa Claus at the mall.
Oh yeah,
and Elaine's like dating the commie.
The episode, The Race.
Oh, that's one of my favorite episodes. Love it.
Whatever. When Mickey's upset that when they're stand-ins for the soap opera, and the kid he's standing in for is growing, and Kramer's like, "Why don't you give him some cigarettes?" And he's like, "I tried that, but his mom's always around."
Yeah. He's wearing lifts. You don't wear lifts.
Yeah, and George calls him a midget, and he freaks out. And that's like, I think that's one of the first time where I realized that I think back in the 90s, like, you said midget a lot, and it wasn't like a derogatory term. And that's the first time I was like, oh, you shouldn't call them midgets. That's not like the right word.
Yeah,
that's the first time I think it sunk in for me.
Oh, that's funny.
All right. Here's another one: the bro or the manzie.
I think the bro.
Yeah, the bro is way better. Like, you just wore, like, if you had to actually market this, no one calls a bra a brassiere anymore anyways.
No.
But, like, the bro just sounds closest to, like, a bra. It's one letter difference.
Yeah, it flows better. Like, you're right, the marketing of it. But I love the voice in my head going, Manzier! Manzier!
Manzier! Okay. How about for fake jobs? Marine biologist or architect?
Oh, Art Vandelay. Just the fact that he had a name and he used it so many times, where he would show up in the race episode again, where he's like, "Yeah, I'm in architect."
He's not Art Vandelay in that. He just says he was architect.
No, yeah, and that one he's just
designed the new addition to the Guggenheim.
That's right. But Art Vandelay.
That episode.
Yeah.
Whew. Where they're making, when he's supposed to lie and say that he saw the race, and Jerry didn't get a head start, but him, George, and Jerry just start making fun of each other instead.
Yeah, no, that was great. Love that episode.
Okay. Poppy or Babu?
Oh man, Poppy.
I was also trying to find like characters that were like somehow were similar but also had about the same amount of like airtime on the show.
I just recently saw the Poppy episodes, and then the one where Poppy gets sick and pees on Jerry's couch.
Yeah.
So it's fresh in my mind, but I would probably lean towards Babu because of the monologue that Jerry has in his head when he's at the restaurant. Babu, Babu. And he's like, I am a good person. I am a great person. I know, with Babu. Yeah.
Babu Bhatt.
Yeah, Babu Bhatt.
I also think about that a lot too, because the opening scene for that, where he's talking about the Dream Cafe, and Jerry's bit is about how every neighborhood has that one restaurant or that store that continually changes and they never survive. And I think everyone has that in their neighborhood. Like, it's such a true thing. And I see them, and I always call them like we have this new sushi place that opened up, and it's like, it's called On the Stick. It's like their shtick is that sushi comes on a stick. And it's just like, it's not in the right area. It's on the east side of Yonge Street on St. Clair. It's just dead. And it's already such a niche, weird sushi product, and no one's ever in there. And I'm always like, I always point it out. I'm always just like, that's a Dream Cafe. That's a Babu restaurant. That's not going to survive.
yeah, totally.
So I was, yeah, Babu. Oh yeah. All right. I think I'm also in my head, I think I know where you're going to go with stuff, but I don't know for sure. Okay. Costanza bosses, Kruger or Steinbrenner?
Steinbrenner.
Yes, I think Steinbrenner had, I was trying to find something comparable, but I think Steinbrenner had, he was in it a lot more, and he had a lot more like classic lines. But Kruger is like a great boss.
Kruger was the one where did George work? See, that's what, who was
Kruger Industrial Smoothing.
Was that in the first, George's first job that he had?
No, Kruger's is the last season.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely.
He works for Kruger Industrial Smoothing. That's when they do the, remember he brings him to the Festivus dinner, his boss Kruger, because he gives money to the Human Fund?
Right. Yeah, no, definitely Steinbrenner.
Steinbrenner has a lot of great, Steinbrenner wants a big calzone.
The calzone, yeah.
Okay. This is Elaine Boss's. Peterman or Mr. Pitt?
All of these already make me laugh just remembering. He's not in it long, but I have to say Mr. Pitt.
Mr. Pitt's only in season 6, and I rewatched season 6, and I forgot how funny Mr. Pitt is.
Mr. Pitt's so funny, especially when he does the Poland Springs water, yeah. And he's got the little, I can't see it, Elaine. I don't want these socks.
Or when he wants to hold the balloon at the parade, and yeah. Elaine has to get the fun. Next stop, Pottersville. Next stop, Pottersville.
And he does that little dance. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Elaine with Mr. Pitt, it's a smaller chunk of
yeah.
the show, but I always love those episodes.
Do you know what Mr. Pitt's first name is?
No.
Justin Pitt. Do you know what Peterman's first name is? Jay Peterman's first name?
I do, because I saw the episode where Mama dies.
Yeah.
But it's not coming to me now.
It's Jacobo.
Jacobo, like that's Jacob right.
With an O at
that's
the end.
Right.
Jacobo Peterman.
That's right, Jacobo.
Yeah, Jacobo.
And George is by her side.
Yeah, Bosco, baby. That episode when Kramer is trying to guess his pin, and he's like, you're a slave to the cocoa bean, and he's like narrowing it down. George is like, no, get out.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. This is the old retirement home folks. Jack Klompus or Izzy Mandelbaum?
Klompus is the guy who gave Jerry the pen, right? Take the pen.
Yeah, and bought the Cadillac.
Yeah.
And do you know who Izzy Mandelbaum is? You remember Izzy Mandelbaum?
Yeah, that's Bridges, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I love the Mandelbaums, but they were just one episode, right? Best Dad in the World episode?
No, he comes back and they hire him as a trainer for Jerry when they think he's out of shape in the blood.
I love the episode with the Mandelbaums, but I got to say Jack Klompus. There's more times where he's in it. Klompus, yeah. There's more times where he's in it that the hijinks are more funny. Yeah.
I also love when Jerry buys the Cadillac back from Jack Klompus and he drives the Cadillac. Klompus drives it into the lake and almost dies.
Yeah.
And he's like, I almost died in your Cadillac. And then he's like, I think I lost my pen. And Jerry's like, oh, that almost makes it all worth it.
Take the pen. Hide and say, take the pen.
I got to go with Mandelbaum, though. Like, so I never told you this, I don't think, but when we go to trivia, our name is the Mandelbaums.
Yes.
And every time when they announce the team names, we go, Mandelbaum, Mandelbaum, Mandelbaum. And it makes me so happy.
Yeah, no, that was a good episode. I always remember.
How old's the son? I think he's as old as the dad. Yeah.
And they're both in the bed together. Yeah. So good.
Okay. This is the fake businesses. Cranerica Industries or Vandalay Industries?
Vandalay. Vandalay. Because I always think about him working in latex and running out of the back.
You want to be my latex
salesman? Yeah. Yeah, Vandalay.
Okay, this one is going to be, I think I know the answer, especially because of the recency factor, but Morty Seinfeld or Frank Costanza?
It's got to be Frank, but
yeah,
I do amazing. I do love the straight, what's the word? Morty plays almost like a straight man a lot of times, like everything's so, not that Frank doesn't, but he's not so exaggerated. Like everything about Frank Costanza.
I think they're both pretty fucking ridiculous and cartoony.
They are.
Frank yells more.
Yeah, Frank yells more. It's over the top. Whereas Morty, he almost tries to convince him, like convince you of his savviness a lot of times. But they're both ridiculous. Definitely.
They both were replaced too. The actors. They're both like the. They shot the first season. They shoot a different dad for Jerry.
Yes.
And then they replaced him with the guy that they have, who's way funnier. They just didn't think the guy was funny enough.
Who was the dad who played Frank? I only know one Frank.
So people don't know about this because what happened with the Frank, they didn't do it in syndication for this for Jerry's dad, but Frank Costanza, they went back and reshot the episode. So they put it in syndication with Jerry Stiller instead of the other guy.
Yeah.
But the other guy, he was like, they had him like bald like George, and they wanted Jerry Stiller to wear like a bald cap too, but he didn't want to do it. He didn't think it worked. And because you know what's crazy to me is the Costanzas are not in the episodes, in any of the episodes, until season 4. That's the handicap spot.
Yes.
They don't, like, there's no Costanzas until season 4, which is just blows my mind because they're such an important part of the show, but they're not in it till the like handicap spot. But yeah, they went back, they took Jerry Stiller and they like reshot the scene.
Yeah, definitely Jerry Stiller, because I feel like a lot of his mistakes come into the show, and that's part of the charm. The fact that he couldn't remember lines or just his timing on saying certain phrases was what made it funny, but it wasn't on purpose.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Also, he said that Jason Alexander told him, like, hit me in the head, like smack me in the head, and that became like a signature thing, you know, he smacked George. And he was like, I can't hit you. He's like, yeah, hit me. Like, it'll be funny. And it is. It's like a grown man smacking his, like, grown son.
I love the part when George is going to go for the job for the bra sale. And he goes, there's the cups. You've got the A, the B. I know. I based my whole life around the D.
The D. That's so hard to say. He's like, what's taking her so long? Yes, I'm going to go repair underwear. I'm back in 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah, no, he was great. Got to be Frank. It has to be Frank.
Yeah, I think he's in it a little bit more than Morty Seinfeld. I love Morty Seinfeld, don't get me wrong, but especially, like, yeah, Jerry Stiller just died, so we got to give it to Frank Costanza.
Yeah, you got to.
The Bisto, do you ever see that outtake where, because everyone talks about the outtake where he's making Elaine laugh when they get arrested for bootlegging?
You want to go there?
There's an outtake when he's trying to say Del Boca Vista, and he keeps fucking it up. And he's like, you think you can keep me out of Del Bisto, Becco? And he just keeps fucking it. And it's like one of my favorite things ever.
I don't know if it was his first time on the show officially, but they were at a restaurant. And he was trying, I think he was like telling a story about a coin or something like that, and his pause.
Silver dollar collection.
And he had this pause that was him trying to remember his line, but it came out with such a silliness to the character of Frank Costanza. It was perfect. Yeah. I forgot what the line was, though. Yeah.
I remember, but I think that was in their home. The silver dollar collection, I remember, they're sitting in like their living room.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this one was at a restaurant. It was might have been one of his first times on the show.
I'll look it up. They go to Monk's, and then the wife's complaining that it's drafty, and he's like, "But we got a booth," and she's like, "But I'm cold." And he's like, "I didn't come all the way from Queens to sit in a regular table. We got a booth."
I think they were at a different restaurant than Monk's, but
I think one of their first appearances, they're at like a. They go out to like a restaurant for dinner in Georgia with his parents.
Yes, that's the one.
Okay, all right. Let's, this one is the babes of Seinfeld. Sue Ellen Mischke or Marissa Tomei?
Well, Marissa Tomei, wasn't she playing herself?
Yeah, but they were two attractive women that were on the show. Who are you picking here?
Marissa Tomei.
You pick Marissa Tomei?
Well, Sue Ellen Mischke.
I love Sue Ellen Mischke. She was so hot.
She was. That's the one who walked down the street with no bra, right? Or just
a bra.
Yeah,
the braless wonder.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. They're both good. But, I mean, Marissa Tomei is Marissa Tomei. Like, she's, I don't know.
All right, fair enough. I'm going Mischke. Okay, here's some catchphrase. Hoochie Mama or Serenity Now?
Serenity Now, because I say it sometimes.
Yes, right. That's great. Okay, here's the battle of Kramer's two of Kramer's aliases, Dr. Van Nostrand or H.E. Pennypacker.
Dr. Van Nostrand.
Yeah, no, they're both pretty good.
Yeah, Van Nostrand, right. For sure.
Tim Whiteley or David Putty?
David Putty. David Putty, yeah. Man.
Really? All right. I'm a Whiteley guy, man.
I'm a Whiteley guy, too. I like his character arc, but when every time I see Putty on the show, especially with the one where he puts on the hockey makeup, and he's, all right, I got to go get ready for the game. I'll come back. We'll make out. Like, that line gets me every time.
I was actually watching the clip from the one where they're at the car dealership. I think it's called The Dealership, the episode, where Putty's a car salesman now. And when Jerry calls Elaine to get back together with Putty, and he's, like, arguing with her over the phone, if you look in the background, Putty's just at the desk, just sitting there, like, staring and not doing anything.
And that look on his face where he would just, that stare was hilarious.
I love Putty, but I'm a Wiley guy because, like, to this day, like, I remember when Malcolm in the Middle was on, and then, Breaking Bad. And no matter what I see Ryan Cranston in, I'm just like, that. To me, he's always Tim Wiley. Like, I know a lot of people, they know him as Walter White. For me, it's like, that's Wiley. I see him, that's Tim Wiley.
Yeah. I love that he converted when he converted to Judaism and he would tell those jokes. You know, Jerry, for our people, you know what, Tim?
our people survived for 3,000 years, 5,000. Oh, even better. And then he does Catholic jokes, too, and he rats on him. He's like, this offends you as a Jewish man?
Yeah.
No, it offends me as a comedian.
Yeah, Tim Whatley's pretty great, too.
Okay. No soup for you, or these pretzels are making me thirsty?
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
That's true. All right, this one is a weird one. I think I know what you're going to say, but this is a three-way this or that with three people that you never actually see in the show. So there's Farfel the dog in the first. Is it the third season where Jerry has the dog? He has to take the guy's dog.
Yeah,
Farfel, Cousin Jeffrey, or Bob Sacamano.
100% Bob Sacamano.
100%. I knew you were gonna. It's got to be Sacramento.
Because every time he's brought up, the story is so random. Yeah, I love Bob Sacramento stories. Yeah, my buddy Bob Sacramento. And then when Jerry and Kramer switch apartments, and then Jerry drops the Bob Sacramento line, I thought it was perfect.
Talking about Bob Sacramento. So it was Kramer's friend. Well, then whatever.
Yeah, Bob Sacramento.
And do you know Kramer's other friends? There's Lomez.
Okay, yeah, that didn't come to my head.
But and there's his friend Jay Riemenschneider.
No, Bob Sacramento is the one that always comes to my head. And the other one that I always associate with.
He has rabies, just like Bob Sacramento.
Do you have any more? I was gonna drop a name, a Seinfeld reference, but I don't know if he's. One of my favorite characters, ancillary characters on the show was Crazy Joe Davola. I love those episodes. Oh, yeah. And how scared Kramer was that he had to wear a helmet.
He got kicked in the head.
And then it got dented. He got kicked in the head so good. Yeah.
Just like when Jerry sees him at NBC and he's like, oh, here you're doing karate. Why? You want to hit me?
Yeah. No, it was great. But Crazy Joe Davola is awesome.
Yeah, that episode where they go to the opera is so wicked. And then when Elaine goes to see him at his apartment, and he's like,
obsessed.
He's like, do you want to see my dark room? And Elaine's like, no, I'm a day person.
Yeah. Oh, man. I could always watch that show.
All right, I got one more.
All right.
Uncle Leo or Kenny Banya?
Oh. Kenny Banya's not on it much, but when he is...
He's only in like 3 or 4 episodes, I think.
Yeah, but his ridiculousness and his just his face, it's hilarious. But you got to go with Uncle Leo, right? Jerry,
really? I'm a Banya guy.
I'm a Banya guy too. I love my favorite line from Banya is, "Yeah, I've been working out. I'm huge." Love that line.
I love the, because there's another guy, that guy Joel, who he tries to break up with as a friend. And I just love the idea of these characters. And there's like Ramon, too, the pool guy. And it's like all these guys who want to be friends with Jerry, and he clearly does not want to be friends. He like very openly does not want to hang out with them, but yet they so much want to hang out with Jerry.
And what's funny is I really feel like Jerry Seinfeld is that guy who doesn't want to be friends with anybody.
Yeah. I want two Mendy's, Jerry, too.
Yeah, two Mendy's. Yeah, no, Vanya is great. I just feel because Uncle Leo has so many different times where he makes a story occur that you kind of, I feel like you got to go with him, but Kenny Vanya.
Oh, I love Leo.
Yeah, Uncle Leo's.
I love all these characters. Those are, it's hard to pick.
It is hard to pick.
I know you're not a big Curb Enthusiasm guy, but if there's there's a season, I think it's season 7, they do, it's a Seinfeld reunion season where in the plot of the season is that Jerry and Larry are writing a Seinfeld reunion. And they do, like, you don't actually get a whole episode, but someone pieced together all the bits to sort of make it into a new episode. And there's when they do, like, a table read, and Kenny Banya's there, and he's, like, older now. Everyone's older now. It's, like, 10 years later or whatever. And they're talking about because this came out in, I think, like, 2008 or something like that. So they're doing the table read, and Kenny's like, he's like, it's dry out there, Jerry. It's dry. And Jerry goes, what do you mean? You weren't working when it was a good economy.
I'd love a Seinfeld episode. I think it would. I think it would work.
No, I feel like that's kind of why they did the way they did it on Curb. Is like they don't like doing reunions, so it's kind of like a sneaky way of doing a reunion without officially doing a reunion.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it to be like what they've done with some of the Netflix stuff where they try to recreate the show, but if you did like a one off. Just a one-off. I would love to see that, but it's true. Leave it where
just watch
it is.
The Kirby Enthusiasm season. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think if there was if Kirby Enthusiasm was on one of the streaming services I have, I'd probably watch it steadily. It's more the fact that I never had HBO. So, I would love Kirby Enthusiasm more than likely because it's got so many of those Seinfeld isms to it.
Well, especially like season 7, it's great too. And they do like, the plot in this like ahead of time is that George became a millionaire off a iPhone app that he created called the iToilet, and it tells you no matter where you are in the city, where's the best toilet to use.
Yeah, it's definitely a George Costanza app.
Well, there's a joke in that in the earlier seasons where they say George knows every public washroom that's like most acceptable, and they like, well, if I'm at this corner, and he like names like, he's like Lincoln, or and he like names a few of them, and it's like, so they just ran with that joke again. But then he loses all his like millions of dollars investing in Bernie Madoff, and he gets like scammed. Yeah, it's great. It's really good, actually.
Oh man, that was fun. That memory lane of Seinfeld. Moments just running through my head is so good.
Is it good this or that, right?
Yeah, it's very good. The only thing I
put a lot of thought into it.
I want you to. I think you can make another one, and I really look forward to another Seinfeld this or that. Because just thinking about them before you even pick the other name, I'm already dying of laughter.
Okay, all right. This is gonna be hard to come with another because I tried to find stuff that was like comparable.
Yeah. No, you did good. But there's still like just those character choices, right? But I was waiting for a Jackie Chiles moment, but we'll save that for another time.
I'll see if I can find a comparable this or that because you try to find something that where you're like you want to be torn, right? Like it's hard to pick.
Yes, yeah, you're right. There's plenty though. I think that's the thing. There's you can choose restaurants that they've gone to. You can. Athletes who've shown up on the show, like there's got to be a bunch of other stuff we can do.
Yeah, there's also like I always feel like because I know you seem to be more of a fan of like the like seasons 3, 4, 5 kind of like, whereas I love them all, but I'm like a huge fan of like season 6, 7, 8, 9 more like the more wacky it gets.
Yeah,
so when it's like. You know, when it's like someone that's like from the earlier season mentioned or something like that versus a later one, like I know you're always like where it's like Kruger versus Steinbrenner. Like, I know automatically you're going to go Steinbrenner, even though that's an easy choice. But, like, I love Kruger, but I'm like, you don't have as much love for Kruger, probably.
No, I wouldn't. You're right.
The R fell off the building. It just says K. Uger. Like, that sounds like one of those old car horns. K. Uger. K. Uger.
Yeah. I laugh. I do my Daff calls it my annoying laugh. She goes, oh, I hate that laugh, but she loves it because it's so hearty. So every time I watch Seinfeld, there's a lot of those annoying laughs that come out. It's so good. Yeah.
You have a good annoying laugh. Yeah. I don't find it annoying.
You're one of the few who appreciate it. Daff finds, but she loves it too. She's like, that stupid laugh. That's what she says. Oh, that was fun. Well, thank you, Shane, for another classic episode between us. And Seinfeld talk always goes a long way. Almost at 200.
What are we going to call this? Is it going to be called hip-hop at Wu-Tang and Seinfeld?
This or that, Seinfeld. I don't know. We'll think of something. I'll think of something. If you come up with it, text me. I think after episode 200, we might do rebranding for the show. We'll do a facelift, like a little renovation. It'll still be the podcast, but we just got to update it.
What are you up to now? What are you on?
Next is 199 after this one.
Holy Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so I think it's time for a nice fresh coat of paint, if you will.
Yeah, all right, I like that.
All right, so.
You have any thoughts on what you're doing for the 200th episode?
I do. I'm going to do an episode with Dane. I mean, we're going to try to do a... He wants to do a live episode on Facebook, but we're going to make it kind of a hot topic episode, I think, too. We're going to do a hip hop thing, but it's going to be kind of like we're going to throw some topics out there that might get the juices flowing. So we'll see how that goes.
All right. That sounds great.
Will you watch live or will you listen to it?
I'll listen to it later. I don't watch. On Instagram and Facebook, when anyone goes live, I do not watch.
I typically don't either, but I think people are enjoying that. So you kind of got to be like, all right, if that's what will get people to listen or to watch, maybe you change with the times. But
annoys me because for some reason I get a notification. Whenever someone goes live on Instagram, it notifies me that they're going live. And I'm never going to watch, and I don't know how to turn off that notification.
Yeah, it's true. And it seems like that's the other thing, right? That's the new white rapper. Everybody's a podcaster and everybody's going live.
Well, Amazon sold out a podcast, Mike.
Did they?
That's what they said during like halfway through like the first month of like the COVID thing. It was like, if you don't know how everything's going, Amazon sold out a podcast, Mike.
Yeah. It's tough, man, because no matter what you do or who you get on there, unless you've got, a good head start with the podcast, you're just going to, sometimes it feels like a drop in a bucket, but that's not why we do
it. You got to find a way to, be different and stand out, right?
Yeah, be remembered. That's my biggest joke, right? You got to be more memorable. Yeah. All right, dude. Well, thank you so much for the evening. It's always a blast. Stay in touch.
Great to talk to you. I hope. Thank you for letting me ramble.
I love it. It's always fun, and we're gonna podcast soon again. And you're not gonna be on the next Sketchomania, will you?
I don't know the plan. I think I'm sitting the next one out. I was very unhappy with the last one. My feed kept cutting out, and I was trying to half the time I was trying to reconnect and get it set up again, and then it wasn't good for drawing. It wasn't conducive to drawing something well. So I wasn't very happy with my drawing or like the stream and all that. So I'm gonna wait till I get a webcam and then figure out how to do it better, I think.
Yeah, I think it's part of the growing pains of it, but I think it'll be good. And your drawings
were fine. I mean, to be honest, like I'd like to sit back and watch.
Oops.
Like a live that I would actually watch, I think.
Yeah, totally. Sometimes you get inspired by taking in what people are doing. You know, that kind of gets the creative juices going again.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, you have a good rest of the long weekend. Thank you for hanging out. This is Eric Anthony of the Cave of Solitude. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes or whatever your podcast format that you download your podcast from is, and you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, all that jazz. Shane, where can they follow you?
Instagram, I guess, at Shane Heron.
Facebook as well?
No.
Don't follow you on Facebook? Leave you alone.
No, because people just end up, they don't follow my art page. They just add me as a friend, and I'm like, I don't even know who this person is, and I gotta add them or something.
Okay, so don't follow Shane. Just follow us. All right, everybody. You take care, and we will be back soon. Episode 200 right around the corner.